Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Janna Balava Gadavarid Hari. Gopi Janna Balava Gadavarid Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachariya Yamuna Tira Vanachariya Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvraja Gajara Sotir Sri Shimana's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Samavid Bhaktivinda Ki Jai Gaura Premananda. All glories to Simple Devotees, all glories to Simple Devotees, all glories to Simple Devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Garanga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastayavatale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamani Namaste Sarasvatidim Gauravani Vacharani Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paschitari Sitarani. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 3, The Birth of Lord Krishna, Texts 34 and 35. So we'll chant 33 together, or excuse me, 34 together, the first one, and then we'll do 35 afterwards myself. Varsha Vatatapa, I'm sorry. Varsha Vatapa Hima. Varsha Tatapa Hima. Garma Kala Gunananu. Sahamanao Svasha Rodha. Saham na now spasha rodha. Vinirdhuta manomalau. Varshavatatapa hima. Garmakala gunananu. Saham now spasha rodha. Vinirdhuta manomalo Varshavatatapa hima Garmakala gunananu Sahamanao svasharodha Vinirdhuta manomalo. Thank you. Ladies? Thank you. And text 35. Shirna Parnan Lahara Vupashantena Chetasa Matakaman Adhip Santau Madaradhanam Ihatu. Word for word. Varsha, the rain. Vata, strong wind. Atapa, strong sunshine. Hima, severe cold. Garma, heat. Kala Gunananu, according to seasonal changes. Sahamanau, by enduring. Shvasarodha, by practicing yoga, controlling the breath. Vinirduta, the dirty things accumulated in the mind were completely washed away. Manak Malau, the mind became clean, free from material contamination. Shirna, rejected, dry. Parna, leaves from the trees. Anila, and air. Aharau, eating. Upashantena, peaceful. Chetasa, with a fully controlled mind. Matak, from me. Haman Abib Santau, desiring to beg some benediction. Mat, my. Aradhanam, worship. Ihatu, you both executed. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. My dear father and mother, you endured rain, wind, strong sun, scorching heat, and severe cold, suffering all sorts of inconvenience according to different seasons. By practicing pranayama to control the air within the body through yoga, and by eating only air and dry leaves fallen from the trees, you cleanse from your minds all dirty things. In this way, desiring a benediction from me, you worship me with peaceful minds. Report. Vasudeva and Devaki did not obtain the Supreme Personality of Godhead as their son very easily. Nor does the Supreme Godhead accept merely anyone as his father and mother. Here we can see how Vasudeva and Devaki obtained Krishna as their eternal son. In our own lives, we are meant to follow the principles indicated herewith by getting good children. Of course, it is not possible for everyone to get Krishna as his son, but at least one can get very good sons and daughters for the benefit of human society. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that if human beings do not follow the spiritual way of life, there will be an increase in Varnasankara population begotten like cats and dogs, and the entire world will become like hell. Not practicing Krishna consciousness, but simply encouraging artificial means to check the population will be futile. The population will increase, and it will consist of Varnasankara, unwanted progeny. It is better to teach people how to beget children not like hogs and dogs, but in controlled life. Human life is meant not for becoming a hog or dog, but for tapo divyam, transcendental austerity. Everyone should be taught to undergo austerity, tapasya. Although it may not be possible to undergo tapasya like that of Prishni and Sutapa, the Shastra has given an opportunity for a method of tapasya very easy to perform. the Sankirtan movement. One cannot expect to undergo tapasya to get Krishna as one's child, yet simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Kirtanadeva Krishnasya, one can become so pure that one becomes free from all the contamination of the material world, Mukta Sangha, and goes back home, back to Godhead, Param Vrajet. The Krishna Conscious Movement, therefore, is teaching people not to adopt the artificial means of happiness, but to take the real path of happiness as prescribed in the Shastra, the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, and become perfect in every aspect of material existence. Om Jnanatim Randisha Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshulmi Tamina Tasma Shri Gravay Namaha Vanchakopatrivishcha Kripasindabhivacha Patirano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Could I get some water? So Krishna is beginning to speak. After Vasudeva and Devaki offered so many wonderful prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, now he is beginning to describe them and actually glorifying his devotee. They glorified Krishna. Now Krishna in turn is glorifying his very surrendered devotees, Vasudeva and Devaki. And he's talking about their past lives. As we know that they gave birth to Krishna not once, but three times. In two previous lifetimes, they had had Krishna as their son, and now in different forms, and now they have Krishna directly as their son in their third birth as Vasudeva and Devaki. So this is discussing in previous births as Prishni and Sutapa, the austerities that they underwent to be able to get Krishna as their son. As Prabhupada says in the purport here, this is not such an easy thing. Krishna does not award the benediction to become the son of just anybody, but it is because of the great devotion and the great austerity of Prishni and Sutapa that he agreed to take birth as their child. So this description of their austerity is very severe, very surprising to us. They meditated for thousands of years. They performed very severe austerities. It's described how they endured the heat and the cold, and they practiced pranayama, the breathing exercise of yoga, for many, many years. And then they ate only air and dry leaves fallen from the trees. So this was their prasadam. You know, they got to go to prasadam and breathe some air and eat some dry leaves every day. So this, of course, is a great austerity. And as Prabhupada says here, it's not one that we can imitate. In Kali Yuga, in fact, these types of austerities are almost impossible. So we have different jagya, sacrifice, different tapasya, or austerity, which are meant for the different ages or different times or cycles that our universe goes through, and our Earth planet particularly we're talking about here. So we know that there are four different yugas that go in cyclical order, and there are different sacrifices or different practices or performances of devotional service which are suitable for each one of those yugas. So in many, many thousands, actually many, many millions of years ago, in such a yuga, the recommended process of austerity or devotional service was what? One of the, can our students tell us? What was the austerity recommended in such yuga? In the first yuga, when people lived 100,000 years ago and were very, they lived 100,000 years lifespan, were very pious. Anyone remember what the practice of devotional service or the practice of self-realization was? Any guesses? Yes. Meditation, yes. So in Satya Yuga, it was possible to do very austere meditation because people had very controlled minds. They had a very long lifespan of which they could meditate. And now in Treta Yuga, the second yuga, it's a little shorter yuga. Each one decreases by about half. And the recommended jagya was what? May you remember? Okay. Adults? Sacrifices, yes. Very elaborate fire sacrifices performed of jagya was recommended. And then in Dwapar Yuga, which was deity worship. And Kali Yuga, obviously the Sankirtan jagya, Harinam Sankirtan, is the recommended sacrifice or performance of devotional service for the sage. So we'll come back to that later at the end. Srila Prabhupada gives a very, very nice purport at the end, talks more about the Sankirtan Jagya, and we'll return to that topic. But first, a couple of the other ideas that are expressed here I think that are important. First of all, the object of Jagya. What is the purpose of the sacrifice? Why did Sutapa and Prishni perform such severe austerity? Well, we can say to get Krishna as their son, but in a more general sense, what is the purpose of any austerity? What is the purpose of, in these different yugas, the recommended process of Jagya? Because it's not just a process of self-realization, but it is a process which requires some renunciation or some tapasya, some austerity. So in a very simple way of stating it, the object is to obtain Krishna. The object is to serve Krishna and to please Krishna by that austerity. So it is not that when they were performing these great austerities, they were wanting to become great yogis or gain some power or gain some type of transcendental knowledge. It's actually described that they were worshiping Krishna through this. And it's described, the word here at the last line of this verse, Matak Kamana Abips Santau Mud Radhanam Ihatu, which means that desiring a benediction from me, you worship me with peaceful minds. So even though they were performing these great austerities, it was in worship of Krishna. The mood was one of bhakti, not the mood of a yogi who simply wanted to gain some mystic powers or something like this. In fact, in some of the purports to these verses, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has stated that the austerity and the yoga practice they performed was incidental to bhakti. In other words, it was more or less the means because it was the proper process in that age, but it was really secondary to their bhakti. The object of their austerity, the object of their pranayama, the yoga practice, was to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to worship him in this way, and thus gain the benediction of having that wonderful association, that wonderful benediction of having Krishna as their son. So bhakti is always in the forefront here, regardless of what the practice is, whether it's a practice of sacrifice or jagya or whatever it may be. There's always one aim, and that is for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to obtain him. So the purpose of sacrifice is obviously, as we were saying, to gain Krishna, but it also means we're giving up our bodily attachments and bodily identifications. In other words, why do we have to perform any sacrifice? The gopis or the residents in Vrindavan, they're not performing sacrifices particularly. I mean, they may, in some occasions, as part of some pastime, but it's not necessary for them to perform any type of sacrifice because they are already completely realized in their spiritual forms, in their spiritual bodies, and they're in their eternal relationship with Krishna. Because we're in this material world and material bodies, and we've forgotten that relationship with Krishna, some austerity needs to be performed, or some process that helps us to break the identification with the body and thus reawaken our realization, our understanding, and our realization and relationship with Krishna. So that is really what is why these sacrifices or why these jagyas need to be performed. Because we do need to become detached from this material world. If we are overly attached to the material world, we cannot become attached to Krishna. If we are so attached to this material world, how are we going to go back to Vrindavan? How are we going to go back to Goloka? In other words, when the Vishnu Dutas come and invite us in their flowered airplanes, they come back to Krishna. And we say, no, I actually like it here. You know, if I'm so attached to so many things in this material world, even if I have the opportunity, I wouldn't want to come. Of course, we also wouldn't get the opportunity. that's something else. You know, so there has to be a plan and purpose that every devotee has to become renounced from this material world and our material attachments. It may be a gradual process. We may not be able to do it all at once. But nevertheless, that has to be not just in the background, but even in the forefront of our mind, that we, every one of us has to, in our hearts, be seeing, how can I, whether it's very quickly or whether it's more gradually, start to become detached from material things and from this material world. And of course, the way of doing that is to become attached to Krishna, Krishna's holy name, hearing about Krishna and Krishna's devotional service. So there needs to be a little austerity, even though Prabhupada is saying this is a very easy process given to us in the Kali Yuga, the congregational chanting the holy name. Even that is some sacrifice. Prabhupada describes it's a sacrifice of the breath. What is more vital to us than the breath? That's what sustains life. So we give that breath in the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So that little sacrifice, but still some sacrifice is there, which Krishna sees that. Krishna sees our austerity. He sees our sincerity in wanting to glorify him and his holy name. And in that way, through that little sacrifice, wonderful spiritual progress is made. So anything has a price. Anything of value costs something. If you want a valuable jewel or a valuable diamond, it costs quite a bit of money. If you want a very nice house, a very nice car, anything has some price. If you want to have a very good profession, it requires a sacrifice of time and education. So many things. So sacrifice is always there to accomplish anything of value. So we want the best thing. We want the greatest thing. There is nothing of more value to the living entity than to realize our relationship with God. It's not a small thing. We take it almost for granted. Of course, we are devotees. We're engaged in self-realization. We're going to worship God, go back to Godhead. Not an ordinary thing. We shouldn't take it for granted. This is some small thing. This is a very special opportunity. It's a very wonderful opportunity awarded to us, afforded in this lifetime, to take up Krishna consciousness. How many people know who God is? Well, we all do, right? Yeah. Okay. But outside of this room and outside of this community, almost nobody knows who God is. What to speak of, how to get to God, how to get out of this material world, and how to engage in our eternal relationship with God. So it's a very, very special thing that we have to appreciate, and sometimes it does require that little bit of austerity of the breath and chanting the holy name. So this process of becoming detached from material life is not independent of becoming attached to Krishna. It is not separate from the process of bhakti, just as we were saying here in the example of Krishna and Sutapa. Their yoga, their austerity, their pranayama was all in relationship with the pleasure of Krishna. And in fact, we don't try to do these things separately or artificially. Decide, oh, I'm just going to take up some process of yoga, or I'm going to just take up some austerity independently. Rather, that we understand that these things come about naturally with the process of bhakti yoga. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 127, it's stated, by rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. So in other words, knowledge and detachment are byproducts of bhakti, of rendering devotional service. When devotional service is done, then one of the results is that we become knowledgeable, our ignorance is destroyed, we understand who is Krishna, we understand who we are, and we understand that relationship between ourselves and Krishna, and we understand the nature of this material world. And therefore, by understanding the nature of this material world, which is temporary, which is full of misery, we naturally become detached from it. We don't try to artificially say, how can I become detached? How can I stop the senses? How can I stop the mind? That is very difficult to do. But through the process of devotional service, it comes about in a natural way. So this process of purification, or tapasya, is described in this verse. In the last line of the first stanza, the first shloka we read, says, Vinirduta Mano Malau. Now that means, what is our translation of it here? It means it's talking about cleansing the mind. Let's see if I can see the word for word here. Okay. Vinirduta means the dirty things accumulated in the mind were completely washed away, and Manamalao means the mind became clean, free from material contamination. So when we are performing any sacrifice or any devotional service or chanting the holy name, this is what is happening. We are actually cleansing the mind, and the process of purification comes about. When the mind becomes purified, then we are naturally are detached from the material, and we become naturally attracted to Krishna. So this process of devotional purification is so critical. We actually think about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings and the eight essential verses that he left us. The very first verse of Shikshastakam, Cheto Darpanam Arjunam, describes this process of cleansing the mind, the mirror of the mind. I was going to read from Srila Prabhupada in the Science of Self-Realization, describes this verse, this very important verse, Cheto Darpanam Arjunam, let there be all victory for the chanting of the holy name of Lord Krishna, which cleanses the mirror of the heart and stops the miseries of the blazing fire of material existence. Srila Prabhupada says, Marjanam means cleanse, and Darpanam means mirror. The heart is a mirror. It is like a camera. So your heart is like a camera. Think of that image, how you take pictures. Just as a camera takes all kind of pictures of days and nights, so also our heart takes picture and keeps them in an unconscious state. Psychologists know this. He's talking about the idea of the unconscious. The heart takes so many pictures, and therefore it becomes covered. We do not know when it has begun, but it is a fact. Because there is material contact, our real identity is covered. Therefore, Cheto Darpanam Arjunam, one has to cleanse his heart. So this very nice example that Srila Prabhupada gives us of how the heart is like a camera. And just as a camera is constantly taking pictures, the heart is also taking pictures, or we could say the mind is taking pictures. Sometimes we say cleansing the mind, cleansing the heart, sometimes interchangeably. These terms are there. So many impressions are made. Everything we come in contact with affects us, and everything is stored. We even know this I teach classes in cognitive psychology, and even in mundane science, they understand that most of what we have learned, most of what we have seen, most of our impressions are stored for a lifetime. Even the scientists know this. We can't always recall it, but it's in there. It's in there stored. And Prabhupada makes the same point that those impressions are stored unconsciously sometimes. Now, it's not just in this lifetime. The psychologists only understand how we store those impressions in this lifetime. But from the Vedic information and knowledge, we understand that we're storing these impressions life after life after life, not just in human forms, but in all forms of life. So anything that we've experienced or seen, any place that our consciousness, you know, has gone to, that's there within us. Now, for myself, a lot of that isn't so good. A lot of that isn't really good impressions or very good images and memories and things that I want to store in my mind. And in fact, many of them are very negative. You know, we've committed so many different type of activities, especially those of us who are older. We know even in this lifetime, we performed activities which we're not so proud of that form so many negative impressions in the mind. What to speak of in past lifetimes? So we need to cleanse the mind. We need to purify the heart. And it's so just like that lens of the cameras there gets dusty, and you have to clean it off to get a clear picture. Prabhupada uses that example of cleansing the dust of the mirror of the mind. So the process of purification of bhakti yoga is one of cleansing, of purifying, so that we can see clearly. And the avidya, the ignorance, is destroyed through this process of hearing and chanting. And once the mind becomes more and more clear and free from false identification and free from misunderstandings and misidentification of the body and the mind with the self, and then the self becomes revealed. And then the self becomes revealed, eventually Krishna becomes revealed. So through that cleansing process, more and more we come to that point of knowledge. You know, and then we become much more fixed in Krishna consciousness. These impressions are carried, as we said, from lifetimes. They're called samskaras. Often we use this word samskara, which means purificatory processes, but the word samskara also means these impressions that are there for many lifetimes. And this is one of our biggest problems. I don't know if any of you experience this, but I know myself, sometimes some very mundane thing just pops into your mind, and you think, where did that come from? I hadn't thought about that for years. I wish I hadn't thought about it. But it's there. It's these impressions are there. And as we become purified, they start to evaporate, practically speaking. They start to go away. But often we find that they're still there, and it takes some time for the purifying process of bhakti yoga to completely eliminate them. In the Jiva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur talked about this this principle of samskaras. He said, entangled by material nature, you've been caught in the cycle of repeated birth and death, working out the accrued reactions of your karma. In this mechanism, two types of samskara, praktana of past lives and adunika of the present life, have helped to frame your mental constitution, temperament, and contemplations. Originally, your soul possessed a pure consciousness and nature that have become polluted. However, now your previous spiritual pious deeds have led you to seek saintly association and execute devotional service, thus forming a powerful new samskara that will uproot the polluted material samskaras and gradually allow your original pure consciousness to take its rightful place once more. The deeper the ghata samskara of devotional service sinks in, the stronger the presence of the achinta tattva that will be felt in the heart, thus causing you to become wrapped in meditation. So this is a nice description by Bhaktivinoda Thakur of how these past impressions are there from this lifetime and from past lifetimes, and how the new impressions that we're forming in Krishna consciousness are actually overtaking those, and they're more or less pushing the old impressions out of the heart and the mind. And he says that comes about by saintly association, as we associate with devotees and the spiritual master and execute devotional service. These form these powerful new samskaras that will uproot the polluted material samskara and allow the original pure consciousness to take place. So, of course, this is Srila Prabhupada told us this many times, how this is a process of actually unfolding. It's a process of our original consciousness coming to the foreground. It is not, Prabhupada always say, it is not an artificial imposition on the soul, but it's something that is actually a uncovering or revealing of the original position of the soul, of the pure consciousness that is within us. That as all of these other impressions are wiped clean from the mirror of the mind of devotional service, then naturally the spiritual nature comes forward, and that becomes more and more prominent. And we can actually see this as devotees become more advanced, as we see some of our, of course, Srila Prabhupada, a perfect example, but we even see in our other God brothers and God sisters, as they become spiritually advanced, see the spiritual nature becomes more and more prominent, and the material nature, the material desires, that becomes, you know, less and less there. So for all of us, it's this process of gradual advancement in Krishna consciousness. So this process is given for us in Kali Yuga as Sankirtan Yagya. This is the great benediction of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he came to give us this Sankirtan Yagya, to establish the chanting of the holy name in every town and village throughout the world for the purification of the fallen souls of Kali Yuga. So this is the only practice that we need. In the Srimad Bhagavatam introduction, Srila Prabhupada says, in fact, in Kali Yuga, all yagyas are forbidden because they are useless attempts by foolish men. In Kali Yuga, only the Sankirtan yagya is recommended for all practical purposes. That's about the strongest statement I could find. You know, basically, the Sankirtan yagya is what is needed, it is what is required, and all that is required for self-realization in this Kali Yuga. So the process of hearing and chanting, very, very powerful, very much recommended. I wanted to read the end of the purport again. Srila Prabhupada speaks about it so nicely. He says, one cannot expect to undergo tapasya to get Krishna as one's child. Yet simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become so pure that one becomes free from all the contamination of this material world and goes back home, back to Godhead. The Krishna conscious movement, therefore, is teaching people not to adopt artificial means of happiness, but take to the real path of happiness as described in the Shastra, the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra and become perfect in every aspect of material existence. So sometimes I think about how many wonderful opportunities we have here, even in this Alacha community, to take part and to take advantage of the Sankirtan movement. And I don't always take advantage of all of these, but there's so many. There's so much there for everyone. We're hearing every morning the announcements of where the Harinam Sankirtan party is going, where the chanting of the holy name is going, whether it's a football game or out on Friday night or downtown Alachua into High Springs. And I'm going to be gone this weekend. I'm going to miss it, but I don't think I've ever missed the Alachua parade every year for this. It's a very, very wonderful opportunity. It's amazing to see how the Sankirtan party influences all of the people in Kali Yuga. All the non-devotees become attracted. You know, they become interested. You know, they take books, they take prasadam, and they get an opportunity to see the devotees. And for the non-devotee, that's the perfection of their life. Of all of the things that they do, of all of the different karmic activities which they're engaged in, from day to night, year after year, for the 80 or 90 years of their lifetime, none of that has a lot of value. I mean, we can say that in the assembly of devotees. Of course, we don't preach this way so much to the new person, but we understand that there's very little of real value in their life. But the opportunity to hear the holy name, to take prasadam, to get a transcendental literature from Srila Prabhupada's words, this is actually perfection. This changes the course of their life. And Srila Prabhupada told us this so many times, you know, that just one contact with the Sankirtan party, you know, their whole life has changed. And we've talked about this many times before, but we understand this principle of Agyata Sukriti, that even if one does not fully understand the process of Krishna consciousness, doesn't even know what the holy name is, the benefit is there. Even Agyata Sukriti means unseen or unknown benefit. And it's described that in the process of devotional service, beginning with Shraddha, some of our acharyas have asked the question, well, how does one ever get that faith to even begin devotional service? And it's described it's through the accumulation of Agyata Sukriti. From some unknown benefit, someone made some contact with a devotee, heard the holy name or whatever. And so this buildup or accumulation, not of material sukriti, not of material punya or pious activity, but of actual bhakti sukriti, actual connections with the process of bhakti, actually changed one's heart. And then one is given the opportunity in some lifetime, this lifetime or next lifetime, to take up devotional service and become a devotee of Lord Sri Krishna. So we have a very special opportunity to, especially this time of year, people are very receptive. We go out on our tables in so many ways, so many opportunities to distribute books or to somehow try to engage people in Krishna consciousness, because this is the process. This process of Sankirtan Jagya, this process of hearing and chanting the names of the Lord. And so any way that we can engage people in this, they are going to be greatly benefited. We can't even imagine the benefit, the change in the eternal course of a person's life. And we don't always see it. It's not always immediately apparent, although sometimes we hear these stories. For some reason, you know, I don't know why, but it seems like these things happen to Indrajumna Swami all the time. You know, if you read his journals and diaries, there's always something incredible happening, you know, with reports where somebody says, oh, yeah, I got a book, you know, 10 years ago. Somebody left it in my car, and, you know, something happened, and now I'm a devotee, and like that. But so that so many of these wonderful stories occur. And when we see the benefit of somebody getting an opportunity for Krishna consciousness, but of course, we have to also be taking that opportunity. We have to be taking Krishna consciousness ourselves, and we have to be fixed on our own devotional service before we have the power, the potency, the ability to influence others. If our own heart isn't changed, how can we change the heart of others? Of course, we can give people Srila Prabhupada's books, and his pure heart will convert people to Krishna consciousness. But better that we also have that mood. And so we need to always approach the non-devotees in the right mood. And that right mood is very obvious, and people can tell it. The Bhagavad Gita said, is it 1854? Brahmabhuta Prasanatma. In other words, that we engage in Krishna conscious Prasanatma joyfully, in a happy mood. This is a devotee. Prabhupada always, you know, Prabhupada said that, you know, I changed them from hippies to happies. You know, this is, you know, Prabhupada described to us that this is not a morose movement. This is not a process of severe austerity where we're gritting our teeth and somehow trying to do it. No, it should be executed joyfully. Now, I'm not always joyful, and probably many of you are not always joyful. And so we understand that that we may not be at that stage or that level. Because that's the Brahmabhuta stage, is what is the stage of Prasanatma. And Brahmabhuta, of course, means that one is completely understanding Brahman or understanding one's spiritual identity as servant of Krishna. But we are in that process of understanding that spiritual relationship with Krishna, and therefore we have everything to be happy about. And we have really nothing to be morose about. Usually when we're not happy, it's because of our identifying with the body and the mind. The mind is often not happy. That's a given. This is Kali Yuga. This is the material world. We have material bodies. They're in pain. They hurt. People do things to us that we don't like. Material nature is not always, cooperating with everything that we would like. So there's all sorts of reasons not to be happy in this material world. That's a given. And you think, yes, but I have this very specific problem. Yes, you do. And I have one, and he and she and every one of us as devotees has our own problems. And we have things that happen to us because Krishna is dealing with each one of us in a very unique and individual way for our purification and for our surrendering process. See, we don't always like it, but we signed up for it. We did. When we became devotees, when we said, Krishna, from this day on, I am yours, or Srila Prabhupada, from this day on, I am your disciple, we signed up for this. So we signed up for a process that might be a little bumpy along the road. There might sometimes be some difficulties. There might be some setbacks. There might be challenges, and there might be real tests. But why we signed up for it is because what's at the end of that road? What's at the end of that road is the happiness, the joy, the peace that is there in our realizing our relationship of service with Krishna. And that experience is something that can never be duplicated. It can never be replaced. And so we always have to have that goal or that end in sight. We have to understand where I'm going and why I'm doing this. And so if we're having a lot of difficulties and we're not experiencing much happiness, usually it comes back to the processes of hearing and chanting. I mean, there's so many other reasons. I've been doing counseling with devotees for years, and there's so many other issues and problems, and we can work through those and talk about those and try to come up with solutions and come up with, you know, different plans and this and that and how you can do this. But really, it usually comes down to our internal spiritual life. That if we're not fixed on our spiritual practice, our sadhana, and focused on our own Krishna consciousness, then all of these other problems, which are there and they're very real, they become overwhelming. When one is fixed in one's spiritual life, when one is convinced of Krishna consciousness, when one is hearing and chanting and remembering, from hearing and chanting comes smaranam, remembering Krishna, then one is not overwhelmed by these things. You know, you sort of watch these things happening. You become a little detached from them. Okay, my body hurts today. Yeah, well, okay. Sometimes it feels good, sometimes it doesn't feel good. You know, but we become a little detached from that. My mind is troubling me today. Maybe tomorrow it won't. Maybe yesterday it didn't, but today it may be. But that, again, that's a temporary condition in this material world. And all of our situations in this material world are temporary. And through the process of hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna, we get beyond that ignorance of identifying with those temporary conditions, and we understand the eternal condition little by little. More and more, that realization comes about that we are eternal spirit soul. So we don't want to get into this vicious cycle which happens. It causes the vicious cycle that I see that often happens with devotees is, you know, I'm feeling some difficulty, therefore I don't have a lot of taste. I'm not feeling very inspired. So what do? I stop chanting and hearing, or I don't chant my rounds, or I have some whatever. I decrease spiritual practice and spiritual life. So that really helps, doesn't it? Then we feel really good. You know, we're happy. No, It's the opposite. It makes it worse. And so then it's like we feel worse, and then we feel less inspired and even less inspired to perform Krishna consciousness. So we get into this downward spiral. So how do you get out of it? You only get out of it actually almost by forcing. You know how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati always heard this. He said that what you need to do is when you get up in the morning, your shoes in the morning or sticks, broomsticks, I don't know. Whatever it was. In the morning, he said, beat your mind with a shoe, and in the evening, beat your mind with a stick. You know, so sometimes it's like that. Sometimes we just have to say, okay, mind, here you are, causing all this trouble. Just go sit over here for a minute and let me chant my rounds, you know. And then what we find is we are able to control the mind. Mantra means control of the mind, right? That's the whole purpose. Purpose of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra is the mind becomes under control, you know. And the mind is, even Arjuna said to Krishna, the mind is like a raging wind. How can we control it? Krishna says that it is very difficult. He agreed. It's very difficult to control the mind. Now, that was even a yuga, end of the last yuga, what to speak of Kali Yuga. But what did Krishna say? How can we do it? Through the practice and detachment, right? Constant practice and detachment. So practice means spiritual practice, means our sadhana, means chanting 16 rounds a day, hearing Srila Prabhupada's books, hearing this transcendental literature, and detachment. Sometimes, you know, you have to become spiritually situated so you can have that detachment of the mind. Actually, many religious practices understand this. I was thinking, even like the Buddhists, they talk about mindfulness. You know, all mindfulness is being detached. That's all it means. In other words, it's kind of like, you know, you're sitting here and you're witnessing your mind, you're witnessing your body. That's what we do as devotees. You know, when we're Krishna conscious, yeah, we see that the mind is there, we see the body and its problems are there, but we're a little bit detached from it, you know? So it's like we kind of let that go along, do its thing, and we know that as we become advanced in Krishna consciousness, less and less that will be troublesome to us. Srila Prabhupada gave us the greatest example. Srila Prabhupada showed us how, you know, enduring at old age, so many difficulties, problems, heart attacks, strokes, and even at the time of his death, what was the last thing that Srila Prabhupada was practically doing, almost his last conscious act? Translating the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, just totally engaged in devotional service, fixed in, you know, his mission, his duty to Krishna up until the very last breath. Now, you know, we certainly can't imitate that, but we can certainly take shelter, and we can certainly take inspiration from how the great devotees become detached from the body and the mind and all of those problems, and they become fixed in their devotional service. And the process is Sankirtan Jagya, hearing and chanting. Chanting the glories and the names of Krishna. I was thinking when we were having the 12-hour or whatever it was, however many hour kirtan here, and especially in some of those last nights, you know, when the kirtans are just going so sweetly and everybody's just, you know, I didn't see a lot of morose faces. I didn't see anybody thinking too much about their problems, right? For a few moments or a few hours, it's like, you know, all of those other things fade away because we're totally absorbed in our actual constitutional position and who we are. You know, I guess that's grammatically correct. Who we are is a spirit soul that's engaged in hearing and chanting and glorifying Krishna and remembering Krishna at all times. And when the more that we do that, the more we're rightly situated and the more that we're happy. So I think I'm almost out of time. Thank you all very much for your patience. Are there any real quick questions or comments? A couple of minutes. Hey, Prangavind.
Always give very analytically breakdown class.
Thank you.
Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gave a little comment on that to further extend on your view that when some devotee began his contemplation, then of course he will come to that position of meditation, then the smaran you mentioned, it will possible. But he has to be very aware that there is a three reason why any miseries can come even to a devotee. Said the Daksha, he was born from the mind of Brahma. He's supposed to live as long as Brahma. But yet he got a goat body, he got a different body, he dies, he suffers. Indra supposed to also not suffer. He is a representative of Krishna. But all this incident in the Bhagavatam giving only three reasons that if we are aware of it. First was the anartha, including aparad, is the main cause the devotee really suffered. There is no other reason. And the second is avidya, also causes, including karmis. And the third one is Bhagavad Icha. But Bhagavad Icha, like Devaki and Vasudev going through heart struggle apparently, but that's not really suffering. That is divine arrangement of the Lord for intensifying the last trace of the purification. So first two has to be meditated on and thoroughly understood, then automatically devotee will never suffer.
Thank you very much. Very, very nicely put. Any last comments, thoughts, questions? Okay, I'll go to Srila Prabhupada.